A staunch critic of the Marcos and Duterte administration's gun down, the family and colleagues of broadcaster Percy Lapid Mabasa now crying for justice. We'll speak with the chairperson of the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines, Jonathan De Santos. President Marcos defends his presence at the Formula One Grand Prix in Singapore, calling it the best time to pitch the Philippines to investors. Government approves the release of ₱1 billion for the COVID allowance of health workers. And tensions again running high in the Korean Peninsula after Pyongyang's latest missile launch. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, the family of journalist Percival Mabasa crying for justice following the brazen killing of the broadcaster. Roy Mabasa calls it a deplorable crime committed not just against his brother, but also against his profession. He also called the suspects cowardly assassins. A special task force has been created to lead the investigation into the broadcaster's killing.
Yung recovery po ng car dashcam po ay atin pong pinoprocess na para po sa pagkatapos po ng download or downloading po nito, makita po natin yung totoo at yung malinaw na pangyayari. Nakaon po yung dashcam at nare-record po lahat ng mga nakukuha na niya. Wala pong katotohanan yun na may Fortuner na puti na ginit-git o binangga siya.
Mabasa, more popularly known as Percy Lapid, was gunned down by two unidentified men near his home in Las Piñas Monday night. So far, there are no other clear leads on the motive for his killing, aside from him being a hard-hitting journalist. Lapid was a staunch critic of the Marcos administration and former President Rodrigo Duterte.
Meron na po tayong taong nanonood ngayon, minomonitor po, tinitignan po lahat yung mga episode na siya ay nag-live streaming. Titignan din po doon yung mga angulo, no? Mga ganon at yung mga comment. At titignan po natin kung may mga masasama yung comment o matindi yung comment. At kasama po rin sa ating i-investigahan yan. Minsan may mga ganon na bagay na kasama sa buhay ng mga mamamahayag, lalo na pagka siya po ay commentator at yung mga ibang tao feeling nasasagasaan or di ho ba, nababatikos sila. Pero hindi po talaga kasama dapat yun o hindi po dapat dahil ang media po, sa totoo lamang po, napakalaking bagay. It played a very, very vital role para po sa seguridad, sa lahat ng information. Kumbaga, that should not be the case.
Lapid's colleagues also condemning his killing. The National Union of Journalists of the Philippines says the incident shows that journalism remains a dangerous profession in this country. Lapid is the second journalist to be killed under the Marcos administration. The first was radio broadcaster Ray Blanco, who was stabbed to death in Negros Oriental just last month. Veteran journalist Inday Espina Verona also urging the public to condemn Lapid's murder. Verona points out Lapid's commentaries presented tough criticisms of the Marcos and Duterte administrations. Human rights advocates likewise condemning Lapid's murder. Carlos Conde of Human Rights Watch says the Philippines has always been one of the most dangerous countries in the world for journalists. Human rights lawyer and labor organizer Luke Espirito says the attack on Lapid is an attack on the media and the country's democracy. He says this is proof. People are willing to kill dissenters so they may stay in power. Meanwhile, former Vice President Lenny Robredo calls Lapid's death a huge loss as she urged authorities to take steps in protecting journalists. Joining us now is the chairperson of the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines, Jonathan De Santos. Jonathan, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today and welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina. Thank you for having us this afternoon.
You know, very important topic we're about to talk about. It never gets easy, does it? Talking about a death from among our ranks. What makes this one different?
Well, we had hope, no, that a new administration would mean like safer environment for journalists. It's also more shocking, I suppose, because it happened in Las Piñas. No? Most attacks happen outside Manila, but so when it happens in the capital, it's a little more concerning. And also because a lot of us in Manila know either Percy or Roy.
Right, and that it happened to Percy. Mm-hmm. That to me is the most shocking part. We were all just ready to go to bed last night when news broke out of his murder. Why is that important? Why is that factor important as we cover and tell the story of Percy Lapid's murder?
Well, we have to look at freedom of expression and the freedom to criticize some policies. For example, if we look at his recent commentaries, a lot of them, or most of them, were on red tagging and on fake news. So it wasn't just commentary, it was also a defense, no, of journalism itself. And yun nga, people were saying also that he was heading to work. I'm not sure if that's true, but just the thought that a journalist who is heading to work, heading to his show, can be attacked. It was pretty early, actually, no? Just after dinner, I think. Mm-hmm. No? So that's extra scary. Especially when you're in the capital, no? You believe that you're safe. So it's still a shock for all of us. I guess that's also why we're only reacting this morning. Mm-hmm. Like, we're still gathering our senses, I guess.
It's chilling, isn't it, Jonathan?
It is. We have always talked about how attacks on journalists, when left unsolved, this culture of impunity also always adds to the fear, no, that journalists have when reporting, but also it adds to the brazenness of people who attack journalists. No, parang they're more confident that nothing will happen to them. So this is sometimes what we get. Our colleagues get attacked. Our colleagues get shot. In the city, basically.
What do you tell them, our colleagues, about you know, fighting for the truth, unveiling the same, defending the same, and yet look behind your back and see if someone's there, or be wary that you may be stepping on other people's toes? Is that the messaging that we want to convey?
Well, we have always acknowledged that journalism is a dangerous profession, but that shouldn't be the norm. Yes, we can take precautions, of course, but the primary responsibility for keeping us safe, no, or for making sure, for example, that when attacks against our colleagues happen, that there is justice there, is on the government. So really, of course, we have to be careful, but we also have to keep calling on the government, to keep pressuring the government to act on these incidents. It's easy to think, no, na parang this is too dangerous for us, or this is parang it's not worth it. But journalism plays a very important function in society and democracy, and we do have to keep doing it despite the risks. Although that doesn't mean accepting the risks as just part of the job, it shouldn't be. So we have to keep pushing for our own safety as well.
You know, Jonathan, this is us. Right? Mm-hmm. We know it. We live through it every single day. We know the risks. But what about the majority of the public? What should they understand about the murder of Percy Lapid? The reason, the possible reason behind it. What should they understand about that?
Well, the death of one of us, or that's the silencing of one journalist, is always a loss, not just on the community, you know, but also to the public that we serve. That means one less voice who could share the truth, or one less voice who could criticize, for example, government policies, or give voice to, for example, if for his listeners, no, he could help amplify issues from his listeners. No? So one loss of one journalist means the voice of the public is a little more softer. There's less volume there. Mm-hmm. So it's not... I saw on Facebook, for example, there were some reactions of people laughing at what happened, or being happy, no? saying he deserved it. No journalist deserves to be shot. No journalist deserves to be harassed, no? Especially for doing the job.
Mm. No person journalist or
no
otherwise.
Person. Exactly, exactly, correct.
And to be laughing about it.
Mm-hmm. And,
go ahead.
It's hard to separate them because there are a lot of pro-administration personalities. For example, Lorraine Badoy was one of the subjects of his commentaries, no? And she has shown that she can post parang violent threats, and this sort of sets an example, I suppose, for her followers and for others on social media who might think that it's okay to threaten people, who might think it's okay to laugh at a death. So that's a factor as well, I think. Mm-hmm.
Tell us why the public shouldn't even treat this as, you know, an isolated case, as something that just happened. And so we move on. Tell us why that shouldn't be the case this time around.
Mm-hmm. Because each attack, each death, no, means, and if it's left unanswered, if it's left unsolved, that makes it more likely that another attack will happen, that more threats will come. No, and that will mean eventually that journalists might be too afraid to report on things, might be too afraid to do commentary on society. You know, so that will mean also that there will be less information for readers, that there will be less opportunity for the audience to air their concerns. No, that. The risk there is there will be just one narrative, and that everything that narrative could be that everything is great in the Philippines, and so there won't be any way to, for example, seek solutions to problems that people may be having.
Mm. You know, a lot of people really can't seem to still figure out. I don't know if. I mean, lately, though, they haven't been able to figure out the importance of media. You've mentioned democracy, you've mentioned our role in that, but really when you whittle it down to the basic of basics, this is all about protecting everyone's individual rights to make mm-hmm. a decision, personal or otherwise. I mean, a decision on any other topic, because they get the information from us for them to make whatever the decision that they have to make. Politics or otherwise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think there seems to be a disconnect now about the role of the media and the public that it serves? Go ahead.
We can't discount that there has been an attempt, or there has been a campaign, no, to discredit the media, but also media also has had its parang shortcomings. Maybe we haven't listened enough to our audience. Maybe they feel alienated from us and how we discuss things. So there is, I guess we also have to listen more. But beyond that, no, we have been doing the job naman correctly, and we have been doing it as we were taught to. No?
Hmm.
Maybe yun lang, some of the issues we cover might not be something that they... parang that they empathize with, or that they can relate to, no? So maybe we can do more on the ground stories. Maybe that might help, no?
Mm.
Pero yun din, it's hard to say din na parang it's our fault agad. Parang, of course, there have been forces that have been trying to discredit us. There have been forces that have been targeting us, no? Parang, targeting us for harassment. And those have taken a toll as well.
Hmm. What do you think will be the impact of Percy's death?
Well, tonight we'll be holding an indignation rally at the Boy Scout Circle in Quezon City. So we're hoping that this will mean greater attention to journalists, to threats to journalists. No? Also, this should be a wake-up call to us in Metro Manila who feel that we're safer, or that we're parang untouchable because we're in the capital, no? Journalists are in danger, or journalists are under threat in the Philippines, and Metro Manila is part of the Philippines. So, we have to be careful, but we also have to parang keep going on pa rin. Mm-hmm.
Keep going on, keep being careful. It's sort of...
But not so careful that we don't do the job, no? But
of
we also
course.
Have to, and we also have to, in cases like this, we have to support each other and call on the public, no, to support us. we've seen this happen in previous attacks on media. No, they it can be argued that the campaigns might not be as successful, pero I think there is great. Parang the numbers naman are growing, and the public is more aware now. I hope of if not the role of media, then that media is under threat.
Mm. Because if the public is in on it, then the message is: if you protect, if you're in on protecting us, that it's all about protecting yourselves too. Because the work that we do serves the public. Why is it important, really, for the public to condemn this? And I mean, of course, it hits close to home. Of course, this is about, you know, family. This is about our industry. But we cannot go it alone. What else do we need? What kind of support do we need from the public?
Correct. Well, the public, first of all, could help with pressure on the Philippine National Police to resolve this case. No, but more than that, the public can also call on government in general. No, for example, we could press the palace to say categorically, no, this is not a thing that should be happening under this administration, for example. No, you're correct. We don't do commentary. We don't do our stories for our own benefit naman, or we don't do it dahil trip lang natin. It serves a greater purpose. It serves the public. No, we're basically, serving the public's right to know. And therefore, each journalist who is silent, or who is silenced, means na that right to know is not as well served as it should be.
Mm. All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Again, our condolences to the Mabasa family. Percy Lapid Mabasa murdered last night in the Capitol. And UJP's Jonathan DeSantos there talking to us about it. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And I mean this, take care and you keep safe.
Thank you very much. You too.
In other news now, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. describes his controversial trip to Singapore during the Formula One Grand Prix as productive. The president finally addressed the issue, saying it was the best way to drum up business for the country. Marcos claimed he met businessmen who showed they are ready and willing to invest in the Philippines. Among the personalities seen with Marcos in the event include Singaporean Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong and Singaporean Manpower Minister Tan Sie Lang. Marcos's trip had sparked criticisms, with many calling him out for watching the race instead of attending to the areas in the Philippines ravaged by Typhoon Karde. The Philippine government challenged to raise more revenues to cover amortization payments for its debt, which has ballooned to 13 trillion pesos. The full story now from Jackie Pascual.
118,000 sa 110 million Filipinos.
This is the debt burden of each Filipino in relation to the national government debt of the Philippines. During the Senate Finance Committee's hearing on the proposed budget of the Finance Department for next year, the Bureau of Treasury said the country's debt has reached 13 trillion pesos as of end August. This is an increase of 11% or 1.29 trillion pesos from the end of last year.
Yung pong mga loan amortization, what we do, since alam na po namin kailan magpo-fall due, so we prepare. So dinadagdag rin po yun doon sa utang. Of course, meron po tayong deficit, so we are borrowing to finance the deficit. And of course, pati po yung pagbabayad ng utang for the amortization.
For 2023, the Bureau of Treasury revealed the country needs to pay 1 trillion pesos for the principal amortization and an additional 580 billion pesos for the interest payments. The Finance Department said the target revenue for next year is 3.6 trillion pesos, mostly coming from the Bureau of Internal Revenue and Bureau of Customs.
Republika ng Pilipinas, ang ating revenue generation efforts will yield 3.6 trillion pesos. Okay, kulang na ito sa national budget lamang na authorized expenditure. Kulang na nga yun eh. Common sense tells us that we should at least attempt to live within our means.
Senator Coco Pimentel now urges the Finance Department and its attached agencies to generate more revenues without having to impose additional taxes on small earners. Senator Raffy Tulfo also called on the agencies to go after big-time smugglers. Finance Secretary Ben Jokno agrees, saying expanding the tax base may also lead to cutting the tax rate.
Expand the base. Kasi when you have a broader base, pwede kang magbaba ng tax rate. Eh. Di ba? Kasi ang revenue is rate times base. Eh. Kung malawak yung base mo, marami tayong nagbabayad, we can afford to reduce the rate.
Officials of DOF and attached agencies are hoping to get the 30 billion peso budget they are proposing so they can prioritize modernization efforts in tax collection and at the ports. They admit there is a need to improve revenue collections, especially since a weaker peso has an effect on the country's debt. Jackie Pascual, ABS-CBN News.
Moving on, a group composed of deans and lawyers have filed a petition for indirect contempt against former anti-insurgency task force spokesperson Lorraine Badoy over the statements she made against a Manila judge. Mike Navadio now joins us with that story. Mike, what more can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. A group of lawyers and law school deans have filed a petition before the Supreme Court seeking to cite former anti-insurgency task force spokesperson Lorraine Badoy for indirect contempt over statements she made against Judge Marlo Magdoza Malagar. Lawyers led by former Philippine Bar Association head Rico Domingo and Ateneo Human Rights Center Executive Director Ray Paulo Santiago filed the petition this morning, accompanied by supporters from different progressive groups. Badoy had made several statements against the judge, including a hypothetical scenario of killing the judge out of her political belief after the judge junked the prescription case filed by the Department of Justice against the Communist Party of the Philippines and the New People's Army. According to Domingo, this is a continuing affront on the independence of the judiciary and warned that if this will not be stopped, this could lead to the killings of judges. The Supreme Court had earlier issued a stern warning that statements inciting violence on social media that endanger the lives of judges and their families shall be considered a contempt of court. The 38-page petition asked the High Court to declare Badoy guilty of indirect contempt, jailed for 6 months, and fined 30,000 pesos. Among the statements that Badoy made over a series of Facebook posts that are the subject of the petition, accusing the judge of passionately lawyering for the CPP-NPA, calling her decision shameless and the judge unprincipled and an idiot, accusing the judge of being a friend of the CPP-NPA, calling the judge a traitor, and calling the decision a judgment straight from the bowels of hell. Badoy also accused the judge's husband, the chancellor of UP Cebu, of being a CPP-NPA member. She also said that she will form an organization that will bump offices of corrupt judges who are friends of terrorists. Badoy had previously denied threatening the life of the judge, saying she merely posted a hypothetical syllogism to illustrate the point, but Domingo rejected her explanation, saying the posts are very self-explanatory. Carmina, we understand from sources from the High Court that this topic has already been tackled by the magistrates during their regular en banc meeting every Tuesday. We are still waiting for word on what the Supreme Court will do next with respect to this particular case. Carmina?
Mike, so it was a necessary move coming from the deans and the lawyers who filed this before the High Court. But what is going to happen if she is cited for direct or for indirect contempt?
Carmina, the penalty, the maximum penalty that could be imposed is imprisonment for 6 months or a fine of up to 30,000 or both. That's the highest penalty that they could impose, Carmina. And of course, the groups are saying, the lawyers, the group of lawyers are saying that the warning, the message that this will send, if the Supreme Court acts now to stop these kinds of comments that tend to destroy the independence of the judiciary, the image of the judiciary, this will have an effect on future cases, Carmina.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Mike Navalio there joining us on the line. Thanks. Back here in the newsroom, President Marcos reappoints 10 cabinet members who were bypassed by the commission on appointments. Not present at the oath-taking event, Press Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles, who is reportedly on the way out. Katrina Domingo now joins us with details. Kat, what more can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. There were 11 officials who took their oaths of office anew before President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. earlier today here in Malacañang. That's after the president decided to reappoint several of his cabinet members who were earlier bypassed by the Commission on Appointments. Now, according to a statement from the Office of the Press Secretary, among those cabinet officials who were reappointed to their respective positions are Finance Secretary Benjamin Jokno, DPWH Secretary Manuel Bonoan, Trade Secretary Alfredo Pascual, Social Welfare Secretary Erwin Tulfo, Transportation Secretary Jaime Bautista, Science and Technology Secretary Renato Solidum Jr., Energy Secretary Rafael Perpetuo Lotilla, Migrant Workers Secretary Susan Toots Oples, Socioeconomic Secretary Arsenio Balisacan, and Housing Secretary Jose Rizalino Acuzar. Now, former Chief Justice Lucas Bersamin also took his oath today as Marcos Jr.'s Executive Secretary. Now, noticeably absent from the photos and from the list of reappointees are former Executive Secretary Vic Rodriguez, who earlier claimed that he was named as the President's new Chief of Staff. Also not on that list is Press Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles, DICT Secretary Ivan John Uy, Commission on Audit Chairman Jose Calida, and Commission on Elections Commissioner Nelson Celis. Hermina, Malacañang has yet to respond to inquiries on the status of employment of the five officials who were not seen in the oath-taking ceremony earlier today. We are still asking officials as to whether or not they have just simply fallen ill today or have other schedules in conflict with the oath-taking ceremony, or if they are no longer affiliated with this administration. So far, Carmina, still no word from Malacañang yet, and we're not even sure on who is currently in charge of the Office of the Press Secretary here. Carmina.
Kat, when was the last time that Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles faced the Malacañang Press Corps?
Carmina, last week I was deployed to cover Super Typhoon Karding, and I believe that was the last time when she held a press conference here. I'm not so sure because I was in the province, but I do understand that she has been still posting several snippets of the president, activities of the president on her Facebook page as late as last week or over the weekend. But another thing that netizens have noticed this morning is that Trixie Cruz Angeles has posted a status on her Facebook wall saying that she will be going on a road trip on Wednesday. Mm. Carmina, that's very odd because tomorrow the president is scheduled to have or to attend an event here in Manila. Carmina.
Lots of speculations going on right there, but where are you getting your info mostly now from, Kat, in the absence of Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles being accessible? Presumably, you get your info from the Office of the Press Secretary, but you've been having a hard time as of late. How is that making things difficult for you and the rest of your colleagues there at the Malacañang Press Corps?
You know, Carmina, this administration has had a penchant for posting information on social media first before cascading the information to journalists who are assigned to cover the president and the palace. That's why not only during this week, but even in the past months, we've been getting bits and pieces of information from their social media pages, which are quite a lot because you have a social media page for the president, the president's personal social media accounts. Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles has her own page, but now, right now, we're just getting information from the official page of the Office of the Press Secretary. But as I mentioned earlier, we still have no clue as to who is controlling that platform as of the moment. Carmina.
And even if you get information from these social media pages and these social media accounts, why is that not enough? Why shouldn't that be enough?
You know, Carmina, it's always important to ask follow-up questions and not to just take information peddled by the government hook, line, and sinker. That's why we've still been trying to look for government officials who could either verify what was posted on social media or add more details or add a context to what was posted on social media. Very challenging times ahead here in Malacañang, Carmina.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Our correspondent, Katrina Domingo, there joining us live from Malacañang. Kat? Thanks. Take care. Keep safe. I'm going to take a break now. Up ahead, tensions rise in the Korean Peninsula as Pyongyang fires yet another ballistic missile. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with ANC. We're back. Here's still the Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. A staunch critic of the Marcos and Duterte administration's gunned down. The family and colleagues of broadcaster Percival Percy Lapid Mabasa now crying for justice. President Marcos defends his presence at the Formula One Grand Prix in Singapore, calling it the best time to pitch the Philippines to investors. The government approves the release of a billion pesos for the COVID allowance of health workers. And tensions again running high in the Korean Peninsula after Pyongyang's latest missile attack or missile launch. Back with more news, the Senate begins its probe into the economic impact of offshore gaming in the country. Lawmakers are trying to weigh whether the business Philippine offshore gaming operators bring in is enough to counter the proliferation of illegal activities being linked to the sector. Speaking before senators, the police said there has been zero crime related to Pogo since September 15, the day the Senate investigated Pogo-related abduction cases. Government officials, however, warn offshore gaming is damaging the country's image.
Originally, sir, maging plastic naman tayo kung ayaw namin natin ang revenue. Gusto ko, sir. Bakit?
Anong gusto mo? Pagpatuloy.
Kasi, siyempre, makakatulong sa bansa natin na, sir, maraming...
In a 2020 report of the Anti-Money Laundering Council, they flagged Pogo as highly risky and it's susceptible to abuse. We incur greater reputational risk by allowing them to continue to operate in the Philippines.
Aside from the supposed social cost of Pogo, Senator Grace Poe also revealed there are now scams that are being linked to its operations.
Call center or BPO ng mga Pogo, ganito na yung ginagawa. Pag ikaw ay tumaya, no, na foreigner, na tumataya, bibigay mo yung information mo, yung e-wallet mo. Yung information na yan, kinukuha ng mga Pogo operators at ginagamit para scam ka.
Aside from kidnapping and human trafficking concerns, the Justice Department is now also raising the alarm over the spread of sexually transmitted diseases among Pogo workers.
It's really quite sad to say na ang DOJ nakakuha ng iba't ibang reports tungkol dito sa pag-spread ng STD. And... as per our reports, we don't know the full extent of it yet, but in the several reports we've gotten dito sa DOJ, may mga cases na 15 to 20 sa isang Pogo company ang nagkaroon ng sexually transmitted disease. And we just hope na itong operation natin na sa pag-deport or sa pag-cancel ng visa, we hope na matitigil na itong spread ng sexually transmitted disease.
Well, this development comes as the DOJ works on deporting illegal Chinese workers from the country. Nearly 50,000 alien visas have been canceled to allow them to voluntarily leave the Philippines in the next 2 months. That's on top of around 400 Pogo workers under custody that will be deported in the coming days. A former chairman of the Movie and Television Review and Classification Board expresses reservations on the proposed mandatory drug testing for celebrities. Attorney Eugenio Toto Villarreal says the proposal needs a careful study as it may be discriminatory. But for Villarreal, it would be better if government will ramp up its campaign against illegal drugs.
Ang kailangan sigurong dapat aralin talaga dito yung reasonableness noong drug testing. Dahil yung drug testing mismo ay may potential na intrusion doon sa privacy ng isang tao. Kung kaya't, kumbaga, very timid, no? Yung kumbaga sparing dapat ang law natin na manghimasok doon sa tinatawag na pribadong affairs ng isang tao. Ang mga dapat i-consider natin dito nga yung reasonableness at yung equal protection rin, no? Kasi yung pag-zero in, halimbawa, dun sa mga artista, kumbaga, bakit sila lang?
Lawmaker Robert Barbers floated the idea of requiring actors to undergo mandatory drug tests before they can take on any project. This following the arrest of actor Dominic Rocco and four companions in a Bybest operation. The Philippine Statistics Authority launches a pilot program allowing paper printouts of national IDs as delays continue to hound its rollout. Warren De Guzman reports.
National statistician Undersecretary Dennis Mapa reveals his office has launched a pilot program that will print out PhilSys IDs for registrants as part of a plan to help Filipinos enjoy the benefits of having a PhilSys ID faster while they work out a way to speed up the process for printing out the actual PhilSys ID cards, also known as PhilIDs.
We started already with a pilot on the printable ID last 2 weeks ago. You can laminate it, and we tested that the QR code can be scanned and read even if it is laminated.
Okay. So
this is the augmentation to the physical card. So our objective is to have about 20 million of this e-fill ID. We call it e-fill ID, the printable version.
The paper printout, e-fill IDs, can be obtained at PhilSys registration sites. They will have the same features as the PhilID cards, such as QR or quick response codes containing the registrant's personal data. Right now, these are only available at a limited number of sites in the National Capital Region, Bulacan and Pampanga. But MAPA says they will be rolled out at more sites soon. Senator Sherwin Gachalian, co-author of the Philippine Identification System Act, says he has experienced firsthand how delayed the distribution of the physical cards has been.
Meron na ako, no? I was given, I think, late last year, no, yung card. But marami pa, my parents wala pang card, no? And mga siblings ko wala pang card. Kaya alam ko na delay talaga yung card, no? Pero nakaregister na sila, matagal na. In fact, they've registered almost months ago.
But he also notes that the PSA is making great progress in achieving its registration goals. The goal of having 20 million e-fill ID printouts and 30 million fill ID cards distributed by the end of 2022 would mean some 40 million individuals of the 92 million registration goal will still be without physical PhilSys cards at the end of the year. MAPA says they will make up for the shortfall as soon as they can.
The BSP is also adding printers to further increase the threshold of the number of physical cards produced per day.
Warren De Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
The Philippines recorded over 16,000 additional COVID infections in the past week. That's the sixth straight week that cases were below 20,000. But Filipinos are still urged to remain vigilant and to keep wearing their masks, even outdoors. Rafael Bosano reports.
With face masks now being optional outdoors, Belen Tumalao, a vendor in Quiapo, has decided to ditch it. She says she's able to work better without obstructions to her airways.
Kasi pag naka-face mask po kasi ako, na kumakahinga, kapinapawisan ng gilid ng ano ko. Parang nabubulol tayo magsalita. Bala ng Panginoon. Basta kumita lang po eh, kahit paano.
The only problem is, even if Quiapo is considered an outdoor space, a huge crowd usually builds up in the area. An officer of the Plaza Miranda Police Precinct admits convincing people to wear their face masks has become a challenge.
Yung iba, may mga pilosopo, sasabihin nila na nabasa nila EO3 na hindi na nga nire-require ang paggamit ng face mask. Sa mga pupunta po ng Quiapo, either mamimili po o magsisimba o mamamasyal, sumunod po tayo sa pinag-uutos ng ating batas. Sa EO3 po, maliwanag naman po doon, kahit po nasa labas na lugar tayo, well ventilated, pero pagka po crowded na, kailangan po natin magsuot ng face mask.
But he's thankful there are those who would rather wear their face masks.
Mas mabuti na po yung ganitong naka-face mask kasi po yung may mga sipon, may mga ubo, para hindi ka mahawa. Mas maganda na yung nag-iingat.
An expert explains that while he supports the optional use of face masks, it should still remain non-negotiable in dense areas and those without adequate ventilation.
We still recommend to wear masks if you are in a crowded places and if you are in a place where there's no good ventilation For example, you're inside a room with people and there's air conditioning turned on.
The Philippines recorded 16,017 new COVID-19 cases, or an average of 2,288 daily cases from September 26 to October 2. While cases of COVID-19 are observed to be increasing in the National Capital Region and other parts of Luzon, Rabahante projects daily cases to remain around the 2,000 mark. Rafael Bosano, ABS-CBN News.
An infectious diseases expert says the latest COVID tally shows the number of new infections is generally plateauing. Dr. Edsel Salvanya says this proves the Filipinos' continued observance of basic health protocols. He believes the public has already learned to live with the virus.
WHO actually is meeting this month in terms of whether i-declare na tapos na yung phase, acute phase ng pandemic, dahil nakikita rin naman natin na the number of deaths and the number of cases worldwide is really going down. So hopefully patungo na tayo dun sa endemicity and hopefully we can start to gradually lower itong mga ating restrictions. I really hope so na maging merry ang ating Christmas. Alam naman natin last time nanatili namang mababa yung cases ng COVID and we weren't really at that level of vaccination yet last December. Pero nung January, nung pumasok yung BA2, biglang tumaas na naman. But I think that alam na natin, marunong na tayong, we know how to live with the virus at this point. And kaya nga, if you want to ensure a good Christmas, kung gusto nating lalong tumaas yung chance na mangyayari yon, nakikiusap po kami sa ating mga kababayan, magpa-boost po kayo para mas maganda po yung ating insurance para hindi na po tayo makakita ng mga case spikes pa at kung tumaas man yung cases, manatiling mababa yung number of severe cases. So,
the Philippine government has approved an additional 1 billion peso fund for the special risk allowance of eligible health personnel working in the COVID wards. The budget department says the fund will cover the unpaid SRA claims of over 55,200 health workers. They will receive 5,000 pesos for every month of service during the period of state of national emergency. But this latest release order barely makes a dent on the total amount of unreleased benefits for healthcare workers. The health department has said the amount of unpaid benefits has reached 64 billion pesos. Groups of health workers had been holding protests to demand the release of their COVID allowance benefit or allowances and benefits. The Metro Manila Development Authority expects heavy traffic to worsen along EDSA and other major thoroughfares as the country's first subway project gets underway in Pasig City. Some roads were closed for the construction, but the MMDA says alternate routes have been provided. The MMDA also says it will reconvene in 2 to 3 weeks' time to assess the impact of the road closures with other concerned agencies.
This closure is between 5 to 6 years. Of course, we can be hopeful that it will be less than 6 years, but this total closure, which is 24/7, is important so that this project can be completed within that time. We are expecting that the spillover will happen in our major thoroughfares. And because of that, the MMDA has deployed additional traffic enforcers in EDSA Shaw Boulevard, at Ortigas Avenue, at C5, and also Julio Vargas near Lanuza.
World News Now, tensions escalating over the Korean Peninsula. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has vowed a stern response to North Korea's latest missile launch. Pyongyang fired a ballistic missile over Japan Tuesday, prompting a warning for residents to take cover. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said the mid-range missile landed in the Pacific Ocean. This is the fifth missile test from Pyongyang in 2 weeks. Washington, which recently conducted maritime drills with Tokyo and Seoul, meanwhile says it is consulting with allies in a robust response to Pyongyang's latest launch. Another breakthrough in Ukraine's counteroffensives against Russian forces. Ukrainian troops have advanced in the southern Kherson region, bursting through the Russian front and threatening Russian supply lines. This is a fresh setback for Moscow, which has lost control over the eastern logistics hub of Lyman. Reports now say the Kremlin has sacked another military commander in Ukraine, the latest in a series of top Russian officials to be fired amid a string of defeats in its Ukraine offensive. Over in Indonesia, the police chief of Malang City has been sacked following the deadly stampede at a football stadium over the weekend. The tragedy killed at least 125 people. One group said 32 of the victims were children. On Monday, players from the Arema Football Club gathered at a makeshift memorial outside the stadium to pay their respects. Its president also apologized for the club's role in the tragedy, which unfolded after the team lost to its bitter rival. A consumer group hails the decision of the Energy Regulatory Commission denying the joint power rate hike petition of San Miguel Corporation and Meralco. The two companies are seeking a 38 centavo per kilowatt hour rate increase. SMC said that hike is needed to enable its plant in Batangas to continue supplying power to Meralco, as it had incurred billions of pesos in losses due to soaring prices of coal and natural gas. But the ERC said the two entered into a power supply agreement which has no room for price adjustments. The Power for People Coalition hopes this is just the start of many pro-consumer decisions of the ERC. SMC earlier threatened to terminate its deal with Meralco if a rate hike is not granted. The Energy Department approves Prime Infrastructure's purchase of Shell's 45% stake in Malampaya Service Contract 38. That's after it conducted what it calls a thorough review of the transaction. The DOE says Prime Infra was found to be technically, financially, and legally qualified as successor to Shell as operator of the Malampaya Natural Gas Project. Under the deal, Shell Philippines Exploration, or SPX, will become a wholly owned subsidiary of Prime Infra. SPX will continue to operate the Malampaya Service Contract 38. Its mother company, Shell, earlier decided to exit from upstream petroleum activities in the Philippines. The Philippine Justice Department says foreign investors may fully own renewable energy projects in the country. The agency has come out with a new legal opinion saying the 40% foreign equity limitation under the 1987 Constitution does not apply to the exploration, development, and use of solar, wind, and hydro energy, since they are considered kinetic and inexhaustible. An energy law expert says the DOJ's interpretation is more in line with the needs of the times.
The Constitution is supposed to evolve along with the needs of the times. And currently, you know, compared to 1987, the need for renewable energy in the Philippines is much higher just because of the worldwide energy problem, but also climate change and trying to make energy more sustainable. I think it is a game changer, or potentially a game changer. The legal regime in the Philippines is one of the things that investors really look at when they make investment decisions.
Entertainment news now. A new psychological horror film hits the big screen. ABS-CBN's Hollywood correspondent Yong Chavez talked to the cast of Smile in this report.
Once you see it, it's too late is the creepy tagline of Smile, one of the most talked about horror films this year. It stars Sosie Bacon, whose powerhouse performance has been universally praised, including by horror master Stephen King. She plays Rose, a psychiatrist who encounters terrifying occurrences. As the daughter of Kevin Bacon and Kira Sedgwick, the actress is a Hollywood showbiz royalty, but she worked hard for her own success, notably with a breakout performance in the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why and recently in the Prime Video series As We See It.
As its lead star, you know, had to internalize the terror. Were there times when you had difficulty shaking off those intense feelings even at the end of the day?
I don't really think I had nightmares, like, as much as just, like, it was a general kind of vibe of some, like, isolation, and that's difficult to shake for sure. But, you know, it's a good challenge, and I think everybody who does a horror movie, it's like, you gotta remember it's gonna be a lot of nights and there's gonna be some physical stuff.
The movie also features the boy's actor Jesse T. Usher as Trevor. He shared how he felt about how something that usually brings joy, like a friendly smile, was effectively used as a vehicle of horror in the movie.
Theoretically, there's a version of the script where we do get to see Trevor do a creepy smile, and like, it was already daunting enough.
So when they changed that bit, I was happy that I did not have to rehearse it, because I feel like that's something that would like kind of live with you forever. Every time I smile now, I'm wondering, does it look like that creepy one, or is this like the one that I thought was joyful and happy all my life? I don't know.
Kyle Goldner also stars as a police detective who shares a past with Bacon's character.
While the movie does have such dread and this like always ever creeping sense of doom, we wanted to kind of shake things up a little bit and really build real relationship between two people that have known each other for so long that you have moments of them like being annoyed with each other, almost trying to build a little bit of humor to mine out of something like so heavy and so intense. And that to me was a lot of fun, like an interesting challenge.
Smile is written and directed by Parker Finn. Its story is based on a short film that he made in 2020. Yong Chavez, ABS-CBN News, here in Hollywood.
And before we go, one of the winning bettors in the Grand Lotto draw over the weekend got lucky twice. The Philippine Charity Sweepstakes Office says the bettor has two of the 433 winning tickets, which means the person will get double of every winner's share of the 236 million peso jackpot prize. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.